care unit. The letter continues. In less than 1 year's time, we identified 2 infants with hearing loss between the 2 programs. Thank you for your attention to this important social issue. Again, the letter is signed by Marilyn Weber and Terry Hall, who are involved in Kaiser's audiology program. What I think it's important to underscore from that letter is that it endorses the practice of conducting universal newborn screening testing. It does not endorse and mandate to do that, as this bill proposes. Kaiser has implemented a program to conduct universal screening testing for newborns who are born at Kaiser Sunnyside. But we think that a mandate such as this bill proposes will have unintended consequences and significant economic costs on other systems who aren't able to meet the mandate within the time frame set out by the law or encounter other practical or financial complications in complying with the law. For those reasons, and in as much as the committee is apparently contemplating conceptual amendments, if you'll indulge me, I'd like to offer a couple of my own. First of all, you could consider eliminating the mandate as in Section 1, Subsection 1. Taking out that section will still leave a program in place that will encourage hospitals to develop universal newborn hearing screening, but will not mandate that it be done, and will not mandate that it be done within 90 days of final passage of this legislation, and that's the way the current law is drafted. Second, if you find that an unacceptable approach to amending the bill, you could extend the period of time within which the test is required to be conducted from 1 month, as the bill currently proposes, to 6 months. I think both the testimony we've received today, as well as written comments, including the Kaiser letter that I quoted, indicated that conducting the test within the first 6 months is the desired goal. It is preferable to do it on a newborn at discharge, because that's when the child is in the hospital, but it may not be essential. And so allowing more latitude would allow these services perhaps to be organized on a basis other than hospital-based or birthing center-based. There may be other models. There may be nonprofit or charitable organizations that want to conduct these tests on newborns. There may be other ways that it can be done more efficiently than mandating it on hospitals and birthing centers. And that brings me to the third point. Mr. Bethanat offered a conceptual amendment to apply requirements in subsection 1.3, subsection 3 of section 1, to limit the requirements only to medical facilities who are conducting newborn hearing screening tests. And I would urge you to consider that these standards apply to all facilities, whether it's a physician office or a Lions Club or anybody else who is conducting those tests. Anybody who's conducting them should apply the same standards in terms of notification of the parent or guardian, what the results of the tests are. And again, this language will probably force a delivery system for those services that is hospital or birthing center based, and that may be a limitation that is unneeded in this area, particularly if there's an opportunity for non-hospital based services to develop. Thank you very much for your attention.
Did you say that Kaiser now conducts hearing tests?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilkin, Kaiser now conducts these hearing tests on all newborns at Kaiser Sunnyside Medical Center.
Costs, can you give us any idea?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilkin, I don't have cost information. I can add.
And Jim, may I respond to that same question? I think it's important for the committee to recognize that Kaiser Permanente has a very unique system. They have a captive audience, if you will, and their patients, unlike the patients who visit many of the hospitals where you see the length of stay is less than 2 days, Kaiser Permanente patients go to the hospital to have the baby, but they come back and stay in the system to see their pediatrician for follow-up care, for OB care, whatever it is. So because of that uniqueness, they have that continuity and can provide the service in the hospital or in central location for the pediatrician to order the test also. That's unique in Oregon in terms of that type of a system for the HMO characteristics.
Yes, I did. Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the average cost today of the delivery of the average child? I mean, what kind of dollars would a person be facing? Because, of course, you see where I'm leading is what percentage of the total cost of that delivery would the hearing test be?
Madam Chair, Senator George, it's my belief that every hospital state tries to get each individual department to pay its own way so that they're not being cross-subsidized or other services provided. As an example, if there's a hospital, it's probably a small hospital, and is only providing 200 deliveries per year, the cost per delivery is going to be higher because of economies of scale than a larger facility that's doing $2,000 per year. So it's kind of difficult to say if there's an average, and there is. I mean, I can get the average number. But my guess is it would depend on the size of the hospital. As I indicated earlier, the number of deliveries would determine what the cost per test would be also.
Mm-hmm.
Because the equipment, as you heard testimony, would cost $10,000 to $15,000. Plus you have a technician you have to train, and the recommendation of the task force report says that you should have 24-hour coverage for that, especially because of the short length of stay for newborns. And so the cost for providing that test is going to be substantially greater than in a larger facility because of the economies of scale. So I can get a number to respond to your question, statewide number, but it's fairly meaningless in this situation because it averages, it's kind of apples and oranges.
I'm sure just a quick thought. We had one person testify that the new units are down in the $5,000 category. If you're right, if you're only testing two babies a year, that could be a very expensive piece of machinery, but if you were doing a lot, it would be a very inexpensive piece of machinery. But someone must know what the average cost of a delivery each day would be in the state. Is it like $5,000 or?
Senator George, Madam Chair, I don't have it at my fingertips. I have the data. I have it in a file, and I can pull it out. But my guess is, off the top of my head, and the last time I looked, I think I had a similar inquiry from a legislator, that it was around $3,000 for hospital costs alone, and the physician costs on top of that. That's an uncomplicated vaginal birth. And I'll get you the number.
I was going to ask Mr. Fiskum, you said Providence was acquiring, they're in the process of acquiring some of this equipment. Do you know what level of technology, what type of equipment they're purchasing? Are they doing the newer, less expensive, like the 5,000 handheld?
Madam Chair, the answer to your question is I don't know. What I have been informed by the staff there, and they informed me that this morning in particular, was that there was a plan in place to acquire the equipment. I don't know what kind of equipment is to be acquired. I suspect it is not the handheld, but I don't know that of my own knowledge. You take to get that answer and can do that very quickly for you so you understand how that plan is in place for our system.
And did they happen to mention to you that, I mean, since you don't know about the handheld, did they mention any dollars?
No,
attached to that.
Madam Chair, they did not. in terms of total, the individual who had hoped to be here today, a nurse, Kathy Criswell, could not be here today in light of your schedule and hers. And so I will get those answers from her.
Okay. And then I had a question, Bruce, of you and the Sunnyside Center that has implemented. Do you know the type of equipment that they purchased?
Madam Chair, I don't. I will find out as well. But I do know that, in fact, we haven't purchased the equipment. We're leasing it, so that suggests to me that it is probably expensive. I doubt we'd be leasing a $5,000 piece of equipment. I imagine it's more expensive than that. We've made a lease arrangement for the time being.
For example, technology is changing so quickly that it might be better to please. But would you repeat again the number of infants that you found? When was this? In 98, you said it was implemented.
The program was implemented in 98, and then there was a program that they cooperated with Providence with. And in less than 1 year's time, they identified two infants hearing loss.
Okay.
Between the two programs.
All right. Thank you.
And
Thank you. I just want to follow up, Bruce, with the other hospitals that you contract with for OB services that Kaiser uses, do they require them to administer this test, or is that just something that's only done in the Kaiser system?
Madam Chair, that's going to throw that to my knowledge. Kaiser Sunnyside or deliveries that Kaiser is involved with at St. Vincent, for example, I think it is being done for the NICU, but not for all deliveries.
But it's not a standard of care for every Kaiser subscriber.
That's right. Well, I suspect encouraging it, but not conducting it in our own hospital, in all of the hospitals like we do in our own hospital, probably because of the equipment cost. And if it's not available in the hospital, then it may not be taking place.
Thank you.
I'm sure may have responded to your question regarding costs. This is from the task force report because they addressed that issue. And I can get a copy of this for staff, too, if they'd like it. There's a lot of information. It says the least expensive machine costs about $5,000. But we need to confirm that it would be okay in terms of getting data to a state registry, so there's some limitations on its capability. Most of the machines are currently in use in Oregon cost $10,000 to $15,000. There are some machines that cost as much as $25,000. Of course, the bill doesn't address the level of sophistication that the machine would be, which is another issue that needs to be addressed.
It may not. I'll leave it open. You're against me. Okay. Representative Wilson.
I guess I'd like to ask Mr. Bishop, Bruce, what sort of
advice
do you need
there
at your hospital?
Madam Chair, Representative, I'll have to find out specifically, and I'll get you both the cost information about the cost of service, the cost of the equipment,
and the level of the maybe it's more of a comment. I'm trying to figure out why you want Section 1-1 out when you already perform these tests as practice in your hospital.
Madam Chair, Representative Wilkin, just the fact that we provide a service doesn't mean that we necessarily endorse the same mandate as on the industry. So a lot of opportunities that we have to exceed what is the minimum level that we don't think of the mandate.
That was maybe a little sympathetic.
John Hall and Peggy, is it Anna?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Salt, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. I will not duplicate the testimony that you've just heard. However, I would say that our interests in the issue are very similar to yours. It's already been mentioned that the Medicaid budget would be affected by the passage of this bill, and we have a sneaking suspicion that claims would filter in and negotiations between insurers and hospitals on deliveries would include the cost associated with this test. Thus, the roughly $3 million annually that we calculate this bill would cost, some portion of that would be shifted to insurers. It's impossible for us to tell you exactly what that number would be, simply because of the way reimbursement works with different hospitals. However, we know that a good share of it will at least attempted to be passed on to the third-party payer. And thus, our interest is similar to yours, and that is who are we going to get the money from and exactly how much it's going to cost. So we would simply, again, be a resource. So if the committee has questions, we would be glad to try to retrieve information for you.
Thank you.
Oh,
and
I'm John, how do you get the $3 million fiscal impact?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, as I understand the system, there are about 45,000 births a year. This test costs roughly $35 per, which would come to about $1.5 million. Then of those tested, about 25% of those are retested because of the readings or the calculations that come from that first test. So that you have that cost, and then another percentage of those is given a much more sophisticated test at about $500 per, which totals up to be roughly $3 million a year.
Okay. Thank you.
follow-up question.
Madam
Chair. So you're concerned that it is not covered by Medicaid for those who are eligible for Medicaid, then it will be shifted to private rate payers. And how much do you believe the private rate payers' premium will go up?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, the first question on the Medicaid, our assumption is that the state would pick up those costs. Those costs would not be shifted to private payers.
So because of the anticipated reduction in Medicaid expenses, you believe there would be a shift?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, no, I don't think you could shift, because if the child is born subject to Medicaid payment, that cost from the hospital would be shifted to the payer in that case, which would be the state and federal government. So the Medicaid budget would have to be adjusted if this bill passes to account for those costs.
Mm-hmm. And another question. So what is the impact to the Medicaid program according to your
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, I could not tell you that because I do not have a breakdown in the number of births that come under Medicaid. Somebody earlier said they heard of roughly 50% of the births, but I cannot give you a figure. I think Mr. Crawford would be the one who would have the information on how many births the system had paid for in previous years.
So if 50% is correct, does a $1.5 million impact to the Medicaid program?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, I think it would be rough for that.
Senator Shields?
Thank you, Madam Chair. John, earlier we heard that only 5% need to have a retest from earlier testimony, that 95% of those that are tested test okay and 5%. Wouldn't that make your estimates kind of a little bit high if it's only 5%?
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, yes, that would adjust that downward. And that may be correct. I don't know what current testing protocol has produced in terms of retests. But that was based, those figures given to me were based on some actual experiences. Was my understanding.
So we maybe have some conflicting testimony here.
One of the letters in here indicates it would be $43. That's considerably more than $35. So it could go the other way. It would look like just as easily.
Madam Chair.
Senator George.
Get this thing just exactly straight in my head. We have right now, John, we have 19 states. I think it's the way it's written. It's Colorado and 18 other states. How's the impact on them? How is that impacting them for all of the issues that you discussed?
Madam Chair, Senator George, I cannot speak to the experience in those states. My belief is that the majority of those states, this is a relatively new mandate. If the proponents who brought you that information would have to answer that, because I was not involved in collecting that information.
Could I just follow up on that? It works out to be about 1% of the cost of just a hospital stay to have this stuff done. And one thing about it with a mandate is everyone has to do it, so there's equality within the market. Say, for example, a person who's in the hospital business or insurance business. So you can almost be assured that you have uniform transfer of the cost burden that you might have. Is that, do you think that would be the case? And that would be the one follow-up, please.
Madam Chair, Senator George, it would be to the extent that the, based on the market share of the different payers, you're correct, mandated, it would. The issue, obviously, is the same one you face as a committee. You have a finite amount of money. At what service would you spend the remaining, if this was the last $1 million you were going to spend, which healthcare service would you buy? Would it be this one, or would it be something else? And And that's the problem with mandate. Take those options away when you're dedicated to spending money on the service. So you have to make, I think, as a committee, a very difficult judgment here. You are placing in the law something that the payers and the hospitals have to spend money on. And it simply means there's that much money that they can't spend on something else. So I think as a legislature, you have to weigh that very carefully to whether you want to start doing that with this service and many others that are offered up each session.
The follow-up question. We were told earlier that about half of the children being born in the state were actually being paid for by Oregon Health County Medicare, the government payment. The question would be is if when you determine that a child is hearing impaired, wouldn't that automatically launch, it shows my ignorance of this committee, wouldn't that automatically launch additional federal dollars because of the fact that child would be disabled?
Madam Chair, Senator George, I don't know at what point that would be considered a disability, whether or not an infant health care qualifies for any kind of federal dollars or not. I could not answer that question. I think at some point, if a disability leads to the inability to learn or to operate, that would be for education, that sort of thing. I don't know at what point in their health care delivery system that it would have an impact.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Senator Yee and then Senator Fisher, and I really
want to
move on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John, what is the impact on private rate payers on their premium? Is there an increase in what the increase would be?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, that would be simply impossible for me to tell. As I testified in, this would be a matter of negotiations in many cases between the hospital and the third-party payer who come to terms over how much they will pay for a normal delivery, for example, with tests. So this dollar figure would be part of that negotiation and likely added to the cost. And again, if roughly half of these were funded through the private sector, it would amount to about half of that cost.
John, how many people are insured in Oregon, covered by insurance? Not the Oregon Health Plan, but through private prepaid health insurance.
Madam Chair, it appears, as the best we can see, is about somewhere around 88% of the people have some form.
Do you know how many
people? Oh, I see. Madam Chair, it would probably be in the 2.4 million, 2.5 million.
And if I take 2.4 or 5 million people that are insured and half of the 3 million that you said it would cost us, that's 1.5 million spread over 2.4 million people. I don't think it's a huge cost. Senator Fisher.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Thank you. What about the ERISA insurances again? They would be exempt from this mandate, would they not?
Madam Chair, Senator Fisher, this mandate actually is for the hospital to provide it. So anybody using that service, I think, would be subject to paying for the test. So if a self-insured employer, for example, this is not regulating the employer, it's regulating the hospital. And you're requiring the hospital to buy the equipment and train the people and provide the test. So if the billing would be there and it'd be up to the hospital to recover their costs through charges.
But
I'm going to allow Peggy to give us just a couple minutes of testimony. I there are some parents here and some physicians here, and I really would like to get to help you. I really thought that this would be a much easier portion of the testimony, and I'm sorry that it's gone so long. I know we have questions, and they need to be answered, but some a little longer than I expected.
Senator Q-Tub, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Peggy Annett. I am representing the Health Insurance Association of America, and I appreciate the chair's admonition for me to be brief. I will say that with many other public policy issues, it is a complicated issue. Representing carriers, my view of this is that the mandate on the hospitals really translates into being a new health insurance mandate without actually so specifying. I think you've heard some options. I think that there are other ideas, some suggested by Mr. Bishop, that what you're really looking for is the most efficient way of delivering this service with absent mandating it. And the interesting thing about the discussion in terms of the way the bill as presently crafted is that this new requirement would really be an urban issue. It would not affect the rural hospitals. If you take a look at the listing that Mr. Patterson provided, you realize that, in fact, many of the more rural places, locations of the state would not be affected by this, and they would be, in fact, in a situation where they would default, come back to a more voluntary approach to the delivery of these hearing tests. And so what I would suggest as you further consider it this is that you bear in mind that that's the kind of dichotomy that has already been created, and in fact, I would probably refocus and consider what is the most efficient way as opposed to making a mandate on the hospital that have more than 200 births. And with that, thank you very much.
Thank you. I would like to call up Jean Josephson, Dr. Phil, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name.
Levesque.
Sorry.
Oh,
like Quebec, and Wilma Wells.
Am I alone here?
No. Good afternoon.
Madam Chair, Q-Tub, committee. My name is Jean Josephson. I am a parent. I have a hearing impaired daughter. I'm also an educator at the University of Portland. I know the grief of learning that my child is deaf, and I know the guilt of delayed diagnosis. I didn't know that our daughter couldn't hear because it's very hard to tell by observation. Our Portland pediatrician told me I was an over-anxious mother when I queried him about my 8-month-old seemingly intermittent response to sound. She was 2 when her hearing was finally tested. She was profoundly deaf in one ear and severely deaf in the other, and that was in 1978. And my story is very typical and so tragic to say that we are really no better off now than we were in 1978. At this point, though, we have the technology to inexpensively and quickly identify hearing loss in newborns. I have worked in this specific area for over 18 years, 15 as a community volunteer, and from 1989 to 1992, I directed a federal program to help Oregon move toward lowering the age of identification of hearing impairment. The federal grant established procedures within the health division based on best practices at the time. We set up a birth certificate screening process that alerted parents to possible risk factors for hearing loss. The system was cumbersome. Many babies were missed, and 2 years after the end of the federal support, the program was abandoned by the health division. It was the best practice at the time. So that ended, the practice in Oregon effectively ended in about 1994. Last year I served on the Health Division's Task Force on Universal Newborn Hearing Screening. Because of the recent availability and affordability of computerized screening, the broad-based committee recommends that the state approve House Bill 3246. You've heard a lot of testimony on the reasons that we need early identification, and I don't think that there's anyone probably in this room who would disagree that this is an important thing for babies in Oregon. I would like to move from my testimony just a little bit, if you'll allow me, to address why we need a mandate. We worked with Oregon hospitals on a voluntary basis for a number of years in pilot programs and in the state program run out of the health division. It just depended on who had an emotional tie to a hearing impaired infant or a family that had experienced deafness. And most of us in our lifetimes either don't come in contact with or know very little about deafness. And what I found in my experience over the last 20 years is that unless you have personal contact with the issue, it gets moved to the bottom of your agenda or somewhere near the bottom. And I'm fearful that there may be some people in the room who would move us again. This is the third legislative session I have addressed on this issue. The difference this time is that we have the technology, and it is so inexpensive compared with the savings for our children, our families, and our state. The money that we save in special education, in vocational rehabilitation services, is enormous. It pays for the program. It's very hard for me to sit here and listen to the insurance companies come in and try to convince you that, yes, we all want to do this, but we really can't afford it. I just don't believe it, and I hope you don't. Thank you.
In defense of the insurance company, it was actually the hospitals as well. We had both.
Madam Chair, is there time to ask?
Actually, we have exactly 1 minute, and what I think we're going to have to do, and I hope that, Doctor, would you be able to return tomorrow? Or?
Sure.
Okay. And you know, okay, that's what I believe we're going to have to do, is carry this over till tomorrow, because I would like to hear the other individuals who came to testify. I'm hoping that you will be able to do that. And if not, somebody can maybe come in your stead. And in maybe between today and tomorrow, if there are any other minor changes we can make to the bill, we will try to address that as well. But, Parker?
Is this going to be at 1 o'clock tomorrow, please?
Yeah, mine would be at 1. So, I apologize. And Senator Yee, maybe you could ask the question.
Oh.
If this is...
Yes. I would appreciate asking Jean Joseph some questions. Then, do you believe in the need for a mandate? Do you think we should remove the threshold of at least 200 births in the hospital, make it apply to all small and rural hospitals?
Chairman Kukup, Senator Yee, yes. Screening 98% of Oregon infants is wonderful, and I that would be a wonderful thing for us to do, except if my baby or your baby was in the 2% that did not get screened and did not get into services. I would not be against some kind of a phase-in program, but it breaks my heart to think that there will be some babies who will be missed.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3246 and close the work session on 3246 so that we can come back tomorrow and address this important issue. With that, again, I thank you for being here, and we are adjourned for today. See you tomorrow.
Madam Chair,
I know.